Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
All right, everybody. One day for democracy. That's all we ask. One day. The New York primary is tomorrow. Turnout is expected to be dismally low, regardless of all that's at stake, including the Democratic nomination for mayor to run against Michael Bloomberg. If you live in New York, especially in the city, just give democracy one day to figure out who to vote for. Divided attention is acceptable. You can tweet, you can be on your Facebook, you can be doing whatever while you're listening to this, but don't just go running away to sports talk because we're talking about the Democratic primary. WNYC's political all-stars, Andrea Brown, or classical music. That's called cross promotion. Right. WNYC's political all-stars, Andrea Bernstein and Bob Henley, are here with a preview. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, Brian.
And listeners, our phones are open for your questions. Please, no staff members of the politicians calling to stump for your candidate here, but questions from voters about how to figure out who to vote for controller, public advocate, Manhattan DA. Maybe the most interesting election is Manhattan DA. And your local city council race, some interesting ones there, including Speaker Quinn getting a challenge on a couple of fronts. And the mayoral primary, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And, Andrea, that's actually the most common question that I get about the primaries, with four controller candidates and four public advocate candidates, all kind of okay for most Democrats. People call me and say, how do I decide? How do you start to answer that question?
Well, I think that, you know, it's worth taking a look at our website, WNYC.org, where we have information about all the candidates, some of the candidate websites, particularly controller, which, you know, controller controls an $80 billion pension fund, billion with a B. And the controller also audits the city's $100 billion plus budget. So the controller has a really important financial job. It's worth the voters sort of, you know, giving the candidates a little bit of a job interview. Now, there are four candidates running, three city council members from Queens, and one city council member from Brooklyn. Bob Henley asked them at the debate last week whether being city council was actually something that was a qualification that they wanted to put on their resume.
Just happens that all four of them are current city council members. Bob was in the televised debate as a questioner.
Well, I think that one of the things that you have to ask yourself is, what is it in general with candidates, whether it be city council or controller or public advocate, go to the website and look at how much visualizing is there. Is there a discussion about what the job might be? Not so much about what they've done in the past, but a sense of something creative. And if you find that, then I suggest that maybe you give them a second look and look at other issues. Because all too often in the contest and in the journalism around this, we don't get to that. You try to do it with your 30 issues in 30 days, but there's an awful lot of creativity that has been expressed in this last cycle that we just didn't get to put on the air.
Yeah, and we did interview, and I guess this is, I might as well plug that this is one of the things you could see on our elections page at WNYC.org. I interviewed all four controller candidates last week, all four of the public advocate candidates the week before, just 10-minute interviews each, so these are kind of digestible. Also 10 minutes with each of the Manhattan DA candidates, and we had Avella and Thompson for mayor previously in a debate I was in. But, people don't know how to choose a controller, someone to audit the city's books, as well as what Andrea says, invest the pension fund. It's like, Andrea, how do you hire an accountant?
Well, usually what people do is ask people for advice. So, I mean, all of these candidates have, you know, divided up some endorsements of people who have really vetted the candidates. And, you know, people might want to go to their trusted news organizations, not us. We
and
don't
that's
make endorsements.
But that's a great question. Bob, what do the endorsements mean? Okay, let's assume newspaper endorsements are pretty much straight up what they are, who they think is going to do the best job managing the money. All these politician endorsements. One of them is touting Ed Koch.
They're a frame of reference.
But what does it mean?
What it means is that if you had, and it's funny, when you're on the street, when de Blasio was running for public advocate, of course, he was out with Mario Cuomo. as governor. Very good day for him. And I watched a spontaneous response to Governor Cuomo on the street. People crossed the street, didn't know who de Blasio was, but came right up to him. And in that interaction spontaneously happened was literally almost like a 19th century connection, if you will. Oh, Mario Cuomo, that guy de Blasio, he was kind of tall. I didn't know what he did. And that's the kind of thing. It gives people a little leg up, a little identifier.
Yeah, but you have to dig beneath the surface on that if you have the wherewithal. And we know that there's a personal history there with de Blasio and the Cuomo family. De Blasio worked for Andrew Cuomo at HUD when Andrew Cuomo was HUD secretary. And one of the, you know, and we know that the Cuomos are against Mark Green in the in that
well,
same.
Well, now you're getting into the deluxe Dungeons and Dragons
I know,
of New York City
politics.
That,
in that same race, de Blasio was one of the challengers. Well, I shouldn't say one of the challengers, one of the candidates in the public advocate race, so is Mark Green, because Green ran against Andrew Cuomo in the New York State Attorney General's race in 2006.
Yeah,
I mean, so all
right.
those business. So it's not as straightforward as, oh, Mario Cuomo knows
right.
what he's doing.
Right. I mean, I think that, you know, that's all about aura and sort of attaching, you know, Cuomo's aura to you, Bill de Blasio. But that's why I would advise people to sort of go to news organizations that they trust, to the Citizens Union, which sort of evaluates candidates in a good government way. Or there might be an organization that they're a part of. For example, the Freelancers Union has started to make candidate endorsements this year. So if you feel strongly about those issues, you might want to go with what the Freelancers Union is.
Well, the Working Families Party. I mean, the Working Families Party is another example of an organization that represents itself as being progressive, pro-labor, to the left within the Democratic Party, was very much against the extension of term limits. Although, ironically, I guess, you know, they have, you know, endorsed some people that are, you know,
that voted for term limits.
Right, exactly. So, but that's an example of where there's a cluster of issues. This is a full-time organization that's committed to looking at these issues. And if you're concerned about the issues in the past, the way they've represented these issues resonates with you, that's a good place to start.
For democracy with the
but
New
just,
York
you know,
primary
on the
tomorrow.
Controller's race, I mean, they're all council members, and three of them are from Queens. But, I mean, there were some pretty clear differences on, you know, what they think. For example, they were asked during last week's debate about their position on two sort of big lightning rod issues of the last 8 years of Bloomberg administration, the Atlantic Yards development and the West Side Stadium. And they're not all the same. I mean, on the West Side Stadium, David Weprin supported it, and John Liu, as I believe, was against it. Is that right? Do I have that right, Bob?
I think that's right.
But then let me ask you the same question that I kept asking the candidates last week. Why is that relevant to who's going to be good at managing the pension fund and running the city's book? Is it that they're coming to different conclusions about the financial impact on the city, or is it that, you know, one of them thinks that this is good for development and the other thinks that they shouldn't ruin the fabric of the neighborhood, which is not the controller's job?
I'm not sure about that, John Liu, where he stood on it with the was it Atlantic Yards you're asking
but
about?
But we'll put it on our website
and we'll fact check that.
That.
But I think really what it has to do with is how have they positioned themselves relative to power and wealth and development. There does seem to be a subtext here throughout the city. At this moment of history, as we're in this really very bad recession where the stock market keeps saying things are better, supposedly, but foreclosures are going up in New Jersey, unemployment is still going up, there is a certain kind of the candidates to try to position themselves as being for hardworking, middle-class, working New Yorkers who feel themselves increasingly pushed out of the city. And so there's a whole theme about development. In fact, you've seen in the race with Councilwoman Katz, her period of time working, shepherding through a lot of the land use proposals has really been the thing she's tried to deal with because of the campaign contributions that she got. She spent a lot of time trying to neutralize that. And what her response to it has been, listen, I got tens of thousands of affordable housing units as a result. So it does appear that this is where the debate is right now, and indeed it presages where I think we're going to see the debate go in the fall between the Democratic candidate and Mayor Bloomberg.
One day for democracy, that's all we're asking as the Democratic. And I guess there are some...
Don't sound so desperate,
The New York primary is tomorrow, and we're taking your questions on any of the races in this election for WNYC's political all-stars, Andrea Bernstein and Bob Henley. 212-433-WNYC. Or on our webpage at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, but 212-433-9692. And Eric in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hey, Eric.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Sure. I've been I have actually been following some of these various shows you've been doing on the local races, and I heard the candidates for the district attorney, I guess it was last week, and really, I want to know why everyone seems to be on the bandwagon for Cy Vance, and I have to say my initial reaction is that I don't favor the children of famous politicians become in furthering their career in politics. That is something that I'm sort of not just I'm against. I don't think it's a good idea. You know, go do something else.
Yeah.
And and forgive me, I've just forgotten the name of the woman who's running.
She seems so
on the ball, and she used to be the favorite, and now she hasn't been getting these. Can somebody kind of lay out?
Yeah,
what
let's talk about it. Leslie. But and just to be clear, Leslie Crocker Snyder is the woman that Eric's referring to. There's a third candidate in the race, Richard Ayborn, and on everybody getting on the Cy Vance bandwagon.
I'm not so sure about that.
Well, Vance made the point on this show that he's gotten the endorsement of. Now, I hope I get this right. I think he said the Times, the Post, the Amsterdam News. And Cranes.
And Morgenthau, right?
But that's a handful
and
of...
If you can
he says
if you can run the ideological gamut like that, then you must have something on
the board. Have we ever looked at the batting record of op-ed writers? I mean, what does that really represent in terms of a close-in grassroots campaign?
What do you think?
I think it represents the editorial writers. I really think we overblow that to bring back... Because you only mentioned one political force... which, is, of course, is D.A. Morgenthau, which is certainly a very important thing to have someone that was widely respected as having done a good job for the most part.
And again, sometimes it can come down to personal history. He didn't like the fact that Leslie Crocker Snyder ran against him.
Before he was ready to go,
4 years ago.
Well, I think also you have to look at the fact that, I guess because we go out to all these things, it seems much more evenly divided. I have to say, there have been so many... events where they all have produced luminaries, and so I think it's going to be much closer. I don't have this perception that Cy Vance is way out in head. I just don't.
I mean, he has gotten a lot of newspaper editorial board support, but if you look at sort of the political intelligentsia, I mean, they each have their people, and they are touting aggressively. For example, Ruth Messenger, sort of, you know, now who former Manhattan Borough president, ran for mayor, now works in the nonprofit world, but sort of came back into the political fray to endorse Leslie Crocker Snyder. You know, David Dinkins has endorsed Cy Vance, but Richard Ayborn, the third candidate, also has his big endorsement.
Bill Bratton, former police commissioner.
Backed Ayborn. Backed Ayborn.
Right, so it's a really, in this regard, it's very evenly split.
I got one for you. Why did Gloria Steinem endorse Cy Vance and not the woman? Anybody know?
I don't know.
I mean, one of the things that, you know, and it's been in Bob's reporting on this race is that they're all sort of, you know, I mean, this is Fred Thompson's job. I mean, it's the Manhattan DA. It's law and order. It's a, you know, somebody who, you know, would play you on TV. So it's obviously a big job. You know, there's this incredible attempt to sort of not only say I would, you know, out Morgenthau, but also that I would be the most progressive candidate in the race. And you've got to bet that this is the only Manhattan DA's race the only DA's race in the country where people are sort of arguing on that level.
George in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Hi. This is especially relevant maybe for the controller people, but anybody from the city council, is there anybody addressing the slush fund embezzlement scandal that's being investigated by the U.S. attorney? Nobody brings it up. I have to say, you guys never bring it up.
Oh, I brought it up on New York One when I was talking to the controller candidates in a couple of contexts.
Any impact on this?
I think anybody cares. In the case of
people are being investigated for embezzling money from the city coffers, and they're running like they're God. I mean, come on, guys.
Okay, I'll give you an example. This is having Councilman Kendall Stewart is having a significant fight in his district. Of course, two of his aides pled guilty to charges related to this. I would submit to you that Speaker Quinn of the City Council is facing very spirited challenges from Maria Passamente and Yetta Kurland, who have done a fabulous job raising money. So Quinn has really had to work hard there. So at the grassroots level, there's been a price to be paid for this. I think your point is well taken when it comes to the controller's race, because in that case, all the members of this, they're all members of the city council that are running on the Democratic side. And indeed, it has not been front and center.
You want to add anything, Andrea, on the Quinn race? We have a lot of listeners in that Manhattan district.
Well, I mean, on the Quinn race, she's the speaker of the city council. She's getting a very sort of vigorous challenge from Yetta Kurland, and as Bob said, Maria Passanante. And one of the things they're sort of going after her on is the issue of term limits and siding with the mayor on term limits. When she had said not to, and, you know, they're sort of arguing, you know, she started out as a grassroots reformer, now she's not. Now, of course, Quinn says, yes, I am, and, you know, I still believe in these values and I care for my district, but that is a very spirited council race, and there are a number around, I live in Brooklyn, and there are two very, very active council races in Brooklyn, one for the seat that Bill de Blasio is vacating to run for public advocate, in which the sort of Brad Lander and Josh Scaler are squaring off. And Brad Lander is a city planner. Josh Scaler is a political activist, a musician. But that is a very, very heated race. And then just one seat over, which is the seat that David Yasky is vacating to run for controller, there are two younger candidates, both with political support, Evan Thies, who worked for David Yasky, and Steve Levin, who worked for Vito Lopez, the Brooklyn Democratic Party boss. And they are also in a very heated race against Joanne Simon, who has experience as an employment lawyer and in that field, and has also sort of been a community activist. She's probably twice as old as they are, maybe not twice as old, but they are very, very, two very young candidates running in that district. But there are all over the city, there are lots of these races because so many city council people are running for public advocate, for controller. So there are a lot of city council races that are open all around the city.
One day for democracy, that's all we ask before tomorrow's New York primary with WNYC's Andrea Bernstein and Bob Henley. Just sure. One sec. Here's another one. And some indications on our webpage that people have their issues and they want to know where these candidates stand on their issues. So we mentioned Atlantic Yards. Chris from Brooklyn said, have any of the candidates for controller publicly opposed the Atlantic Yards project? So that's important to Chris. Casey from the Upper West Side asked, which candidates voted to extend term limits? Those individuals do not get my vote, period. Did basically the whole council vote to extend
term
limits?
No, indeed, this was a big moment of conscience. And for, I think, Weprin in his debate, the controller candidate, used it a couple of times in the debate to define the field, because only John Liu and Weprin in that field voted against the mayor and stood up against the speaker. In that case, that means that David Yasky and Melinda Katz sided with the mayor and speaker Quinn. And so this litmus test is also being applied, I might say, throughout the entire down ballot. This is coming up mm-hmm. as a central issue. And I would say that for the mayor, he's got to pay close attention here, because
right.
if we see that people are still really mad about this,
yes.
then people... It did resonate with people, and it's still in the electorate's mind.
And the winner of the right. mayoral primary could capitalize on it.
In the controller's race, David Yasky is trying to stake out a middle ground on the Atlantic Yards thing, that he is sort of pro-development.
Only for the good parts,
right.
but against the bad parts.
Exactly. Thank you, Bob. but none of them were or have been vigorous opponents of the Atlantic Yard debate. That mantle belongs to Norman Siegel, who is running for public advocate, who has been, in fact, the lawyer in some of these cases against the lawsuit. And there was an interesting exchange against the project between him and Bill de Blasio, who is also running for public advocate, because Bill de Blasio is in favor and has been in favor of the Atlantic Yards development because, he says, of the affordable housing and jobs benefits that it would bring. So there's a very clear division in that race for public advocate.
Interesting one from Quinn. Regarding another city council powerhouse, Jamal from Jamaica on our website asks, does anybody have details on Clyde Vanell? He's challenging Leroy Comrie for council in Queens. Comrie ran for speaker last time around.
So did everybody else.
That's true. he says Vanell has blanketed Southeast Queens with flyers, lawn signs, and leaflets.
Great story in the Times over the weekend about that, talking about
that
the
race.
Challenge from inside. And basically that's an example of an insurgent candidate trying to do a shoestring race. The thing here that's so depressing for the entire process, and I think puts in context some of your the way you've been setting this up, is we do expect this anemic turnout. We're talking about 10% of the voters. I mean, this town was alive with excitement just last November when President Obama, I guess some 4.6 million people in the five boroughs turned out. Experts are expecting 450,000 to turn out tomorrow. So where did they go? All points bulletin for voters. And as a result, it really creates a situation where these candidates are putting all this energy into it, but these council races could be decided by hundreds of votes.
On the other hand,
just to say about the city council, I mean, you know, Bob was saying everybody ran for speaker, and of course we see all these people now running for citywide office from the council. But, you know, a council person in New York can get as many votes as someone who is running for Congress in other parts of the country. I mean, you know, we're a big city, we have a big population, and a lot of people support their for city council. So you do end up having sort of, you know, perhaps more political empowerment in New York than there are positions to offer people who, you know, want to do this. And that's part of why you see this incredibly crowded field for these positions that people are sort of like, well, you know, do I care who my public advocate
is? Also, unemployment is high in general, so it's an opportunity.
Right. Adam, on Coney Island, or I should say in Coney Island. It's not really an island anymore so much, is it? Adam, you're on WNYC. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'd like to ask you, if we elect non-professional politicians within term limits for two terms, is the city going to be worse off or better off without professionals?
What do you think, Adam?
I think it's going to be worse.
Because?
These guys have experience. They know what the laws say and how to avoid them.
And are you angry at the mayor and some of city council for suspending term limits without going back to the voters who initially voted them in?
Yes, I am, very much so.
And that's the paradox.
That's not democracy.
Yes, that's the paradox that so many
voted
for. Because I don't think, you know, there are a lot of sort of good government people who don't think term limits are a good idea for exactly the reason that Adam says. But on the other hand, they're furious at the mayor for taking democracy into his own hands like this.
You know, I would argue that one of the reasons that people should really be thinking about these controller and public advocate races is because we do have a situation in which Michael Bloomberg is incredibly powerful, not only because he, you know, is favored to win a third term, but because he also has incredible influence in the nonprofit world because of his personal giving, and also in the business world because he has his namesake business. I mean, he's a very, very powerful person. So I would argue that these number two, number three positions, you do want someone who is going to be an activist, as Bob said, someone with ideas, because you want to have a check on all that power. I mean, one thing that we do know in democracy is, you know, no matter how wonderful you think a public official is, nobody is perfect. And to have this back and forth is what keeps it functioning.
Quick question. A couple of people posting on our website, one a registered member of the Working Families Party, the other a registered Green, want to know if they can vote in the Democratic primary
tomorrow. I think
tomorrow.
You have to be a registered member of the Democratic Party.
I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Yes, you cannot vote in the Democratic primary unless you are a registered Democrat.
Bob, you were reporting over the weekend about anonymous robocalls against controller candidate Melinda Katz. What kind of robocalls, and are they dirty pool?
Well, what I learned was that according to the Campaign Finance Board, in a federal election, there has to be an identifier. But in the city and state, you don't have to have the identifier. I think the question here people would want to ask is, why would someone want to make it anonymous? There is a kind of, I guess, an ethical question that if you have an accusation, that you should stand behind it. And so we'll have to see how much impact it's going to have. And if it's an outside organization, people need to know that too. So if it wasn't one of the candidates, because the only thing that has to happen is if someone paid for it and they're running for office, it has to show up on their campaign disclosure form. But what's troubling is if it's an outside group and they don't have any signature fingerprints, that's a problem.
So we may need a change in the law. One day for democracy, that's all we ask. Study up for the Democratic primary tomorrow if you are a registered Democrat, in New York City especially. And we'll be back with more reporters tomorrow morning on primary day to keep taking your questions about these races if you don't vote before 10 a.m. And you can see WNYC.org, our special primary election page. It has all our interviews. It has all the good reporter packages that kind of summarize these races. So take a few minutes. Give 20 minutes to Democracy if you don't have a whole day. And then we'll be back tomorrow. Also, join me tomorrow night for a primary night special that will have any returns that come in, but that will also go big, as a lot of you wanted to examine the state of democracy from this week's local elections to politics in Afghanistan and all kinds of things tomorrow night at 9 here on 93.9 FM and AM 820 as well as WNYC.org. Coming up in a minute, we will start a September series on redesigning your commute. Stay tuned.